Okay, good morning. Can you all hear me? Good. Good morning. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for the beautiful music. I don't know how you got it to play and stop exactly at time to start the service, but you're very talented, thanks for all you do. I see Peggy's here. Good. You made it, Peggy. You figured out the time. That's great. This is the Sunday gathering of Awakening Together. Awakening Together is an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening the one true self. Within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols, we seek to discern one truth and rest in its embrace. So welcome to our Sunday service. The first item on the agenda is to greet one another. And, you know, if you're in a physical, a brick-and-mortar church, you would the minister will often have you turn to your neighbor and say good morning and greet one another, and we do the same thing here. So, so we do the same thing here, and so Lynn's going to play another little song for us while we take a moment and say good morning. Good morning, Jay. So I'll let go of the mic so Lynn can do that.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Lovely, lovely. Thank you. Good morning, all. Okay. So, Awakening Together is a universal assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. We are also dedicated to recognizing the ways we deny universal wisdom by adopting personal beliefs and biases We want to recognize these limitations so we can free ourselves from them and open to the continuous flow of universal wisdom. And each Sunday we choose one core value, generally choose one core value to share that is representative of the message that we are about to share. And I think I always choose the same one. I think I hear Dove say that too when he teaches. But the core value that I will read is core value number 3. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. Thanks, Bart, for posting those. All right, and that takes us to our announcements. Let me pull up the announcements here. Okay, first thing, I saw Regina was talking about the retreat. Yay, that's coming up, finally. It starts in, 5 days? And it will feature Jan Frazier, Regina Dawn Akers, and Bentinho Massaro. Riding motorcycles outside today. It is pretty nice up there. It's pretty loud in here. Unfortunately, the registration for the retreat has closed. But I hope all of you are going. I hope to see many of you there. And I see many of your names in the room. And I haven't met you, but I also see it on our registration list. So I really look forward to meeting several of you in person. And, yes, if you want to know more about the retreat, if you want to brush up on that, Barbara has Barb has posted the link in the room. So let me go back here to the announcements. That's great. I had that pulled up, and now it doesn't seem to be. So let me see if I can find it, my announcements. There it is. Okay. Next announcement is our upcoming Sufi class that is part of our MPP program, Introduction to Sufi Thought. And that class, let me click on that link here. Okay. That class will begin November the homework begins November the 11th. The class actually begins on Tuesday evenings, November 17th. It's a 5-week long class. The Tuesday evening class will be facilitated by Jay McCormick. The Wednesday morning class is facilitated by Regina Dawn Akers. That begins on November the 18th. Again, homework will begin on either November the 11th if you're in the Tuesday class or November the 12th. If you're in the Wednesday morning class, the cost is $100. You know, each of those MPP classes are $20 per session. So it's 5 weeks long. It's a $100 class. I highly encourage you to look into doing it. And, you know, if you want to take a class, pardon me, you don't have to take the whole MPP program. If you want to take a class, you're free to sign up and take a class without having done all of the other classes. So if you see something that you're interested in, certainly register for the class. So the registration for that class is now open. And let's see. I assume that Barb has posted that registration link. Yeah. Whirling dervishes need apply. Yes, dervish. Yeah, you just thought that was something from Bugs Bunny, didn't you? But no, that's what they call the devotees in Sufism. And as Regina's saying here, it is a really sweet class. Okay. And let's see. Let me pull up this next announcement. The next announcement is the ACIM conference in Las Vegas. That is the April 8th through the 10th. And for a limited time, you can still get a lowered registration rate until November the 14th. You get the low registration rate of $4.99. After that, it goes up. Pull that up here. Yeah, this year's theme is Change Your Mind, Change the World. And it will feature hundreds of core students, 26 presenters, and according to this, the biggest conference of the year. And that's, yeah, I'm sure that that's true. The teachers include Regina Dawn Akers, Jerry Cusimano, Candace and David Paul Doyle, Maria Felipe, Dove, and Veronica, Bill Free, Lisa Natoli, John Mark Hammer, David Hoffmeister, John Mundy, Marie Perrone, Earl Purdy, Amy Torres, among others. So it's going to be a big conference, a lot of fun, and be sure again to book before November the 14th to get that lowered rate. Also, you're going to want to register through through Awakening Together, if possible. We get credit for that if you do that. So you can go to our website and find it under events on our website. Oh, wow, cool. See that about Oprah. Barb has posted the link on the page here. Yeah, and Regina's written, select Regina Dawn Akers Awakening Together when you register in order to give credit to Awakening Together. And then Regina, I just saw this morning, Regina has created a lovely page road trip ideas for the Las Vegas road trip to the conference. And I hope, Barb, that you have that link. And let me pull that up real quickly here. And, and so it just gives you the opportunity to if you're going to drive, to really spend some time at the really amazing places along the way. And it's just so sweet of Regina to have created that road trip page. So thank you for doing that, Regina. Yeah, Barb's posted it. Yeah, awesome. Okay. So, and I think that is all the announcements. And at this point, we'll have another song. And Lynn will play a song for us so that we can begin to settle in here and prepare for the prayer and the message. So I will let go of the mic. me hear what I need to hear.
This is Nanak's prayer, O God.
Let others hear what they need to hear.
Please attach me to your service.
Well, my talk is called Preparing for Enlightenment, which is kind of funny because, often as I'm going to sleep, I'll take my computer and play something inspiring, talk about Ganguji or Guji or Regina or, something inspiring. Last night I decided to listen to Regina's Seven Steps to Awakening program from last Sunday night, and lo and behold, her talk was pretty much on preparing for enlightenment. Yeah, so it was I really encourage you to listen to that. I think it's Regina, you may be remember the numbers. Just right in a second, I don't. 678, maybe. 77 to awakening. Yeah. Excellent program. You might say, it's one mind, but I tell you how this talk came around. And I realized that as I listened to the end of her program last night, she was preparing to talk to our satsang guest, Susanna Marie. So there were a number of people there in the room. As she spoke about preparing for enlightenment, and I tuned in then to that thing. And one of the questions that I heard asked was, "What is the best way to prepare for enlightenment?" And so that's really what inspired my talk. But I didn't get the backstory. I didn't get to hear prior to that time Gina's talk on the same subject. So I do want to encourage you. Well, listen to that thing. That was really, really inspiring. And also listen to the seven-step teaching. That was eight about preparing for enlightenment. So what we'll do now is we'll have our inspirational reading. Sparkly Edition, Course in Miracles, and I highlight the Sparkly Edition because the chapters are numbered differently. I have recently found out. This is chapter 15, The Purpose of Time, I will turn this over to Peggy House.
Good morning, and can everyone hear me okay?
Attach me
too
to
loud,
your
too soft.
Service.
Okay. Our reading for
the
day. Can you imagine what it means to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties, but merely to be perfectly calm and quiet all the time? Yet that is what time is for. Just that. God's teacher cannot be sacrificed He is not able to teach you much, as you have become such a consistent learner that you learn all the time. When this has happened, you will no longer need a teacher or teacher which to learn. One source of perceived discouragement from which you suffer and that the results of the Holy Spirit's teachings are far in the future. This is not so. For the Holy Spirit brings us to time his own work and is not bound by it. In all the ways that time seems to bring,
with it is due but to your identification with the ego, which uses time to support its belief in destruction. The ego, like the Holy Spirit, uses time to convince you of the inevitability of the goal and end of teaching. To the ego, the goal is death, which is its end, but to the Holy Spirit, the goal is life, which has no end. Practicing the Holy Instant. This course is not beyond immediate learning unless you prefer to believe that what God wills takes time. And this means only that you would rather delay the recognition that His will is so. The Holy Instant is this one and every one. The one you want it to be, it is. The one you would not have it be is lost to you. You must decide on when it is. Delay it not, for beyond the past and future, in which you will not find it, it stands shimmering, in shimmering readiness for your acceptance. Yet you cannot bring it into glad awareness while you do not want it, for it holds the whole release from littleness. Your practice must therefore rest upon your willingness to let all littleness go. The instant in which magnitude will dawn upon you is but as far away as your desire for it. As long as you desire it not and cherish littleness instead, by so much is it far from you. By so much as you want it, will you bring it nearer? Think not that you can find salvation in your own way and have it. Give over every plan that you have made for salvation in exchange for God's. His will content you, and there is nothing else that can bring you peace. For peace is of God and of no one beside Him. Be humble before Him and yet great in Him. And value no plan of the ego before the plan of God. For you leave empty your place in His plan, which you must fulfill if you would join with me. By your decision to join in any plan but His, I call you to fulfill your holy part in the plan that He has given to the world for its release from littleness. God would have His host abide in perfect freedom. Every allegiance to a plan of salvation that is apart from Him diminishes the value of His will for you in your own minds, and yet it is your mind that is the host to Him. Would you learn how perfect and immaculate is the holy altar on which your Father has placed Himself? This you will recognize in the holy instant in which you willingly and gladly give over every plan but His, for there lies peace, perfectly clear, because you have been willing to meet its conditions. You can claim the holy instant anytime and anywhere you want it. In your practice, try to give over every plan you have accepted for finding magnitude in littleness. It is not there. Use the holy instant only to recognize that you alone cannot know where it is and can only deceive yourself. I stand within the holy instant, as clear as you would have me. And the extent to which you learn to be willing to accept me is the measure of the time in which the holy instant will be yours. I call to you to make the holy instant yours at once, for the release from littleness in the mind of the host of God depends on willingness and not on time. The reason why this course is simple is that truth is simple. Complexity is of the ego and is nothing more than the ego's attempt to obscure the obvious. You could live forever in the holy instant, beginning now and reaching to eternity, but for a very simple reason. Do not obscure the simplicity of this reason, for if you do, it will be only because you prefer not to recognize it and not to let it go. The simple reason, simply stated, is this. The holy instant is a time in which you receive and give perfect communication. This means, however, that it is a time in which your mind is open, both to receive and give. It is the recognition that all minds are in communication. It therefore seeks to change nothing, but merely to accept everything. How can you do this when you would prefer to have private thoughts and keep them? The only way you could do that is to deny the perfect communication that makes the holy instant what it is. You believe that it is possible to harbor thoughts you would not share, and that salvation lies in keeping your thoughts to yourself alone. For in private thoughts, known only to yourself, you think you find a way to keep what you would have alone and share what you would share. And then you wonder why it is that you are not in full communication with those around you and with God who surrounds all of you together. Every thought you would keep hidden shuts communication off because you would have it so. It is impossible to recognize perfect communication while breaking communication holds value to you. Ask yourselves honestly, would I want to have perfect communication? And am I wholly willing to let everything that interferes with it go forever? If the answer is no, then the Holy Spirit's readiness to give it to you is not enough to make it yours, for you are not ready to share it with Him. And it cannot come into a mind that has decided to oppose it. For the holy instant is given and received with equal willingness, being the acceptance of the single will that governs all thought. The necessary condition for the holy instant does not require that you have no thoughts which are not pure, but it does require that you have none that you would keep. Innocence is not of your making. It is given you the instant you would have it. Yet it would not be atonement if there were no need for atonement. You will not be able to accept perfect communication as long as you would hide it from yourself. For what you would hide is hidden from you. In your practice, then, try only to be vigilant against deception and seek not to protect the thoughts you would keep unto yourself. Let the Holy Spirit's purity shine them away and bring all your awareness to the readiness for purity He offers you. Thus will He make you ready to acknowledge that you are host to God, and hostage to no one and nothing.
Wow, thank you, Peggy. Beautifully read. Very, very clear. Thank you. I want to first of all, highlight what Regina said, and yes, so I absolutely agree that self-honesty, when it says be vigilant against deception, it's talking there about, Jesus is talking there about self-honesty. And that's critical in this endeavor. And I'm going to come back to that, but before I do that, let me first talk about a little bit more about the genesis of this talk, about why I want to talk about preparing for enlightenment. I've been going through a period of some impatience, some frustration, because I had a nice long talk with Regina about this the other day, but I feel like I'm honestly, earnestly, doing the work, doing what's required to be done, doing what I'm asked, what I feel asked is asked of me to do, in order to attain self-realization. And while I am experiencing some effects of that work, I am experiencing increased peace of mind. I'm experiencing less struggle in my personal circumstances, less strife in my personal relationships. I still still experience daily the need for still more work, because I still become dispirited. I still become angry. I still have periods of selfishness. I still have periods where I'm worried. I'm still beleaguered by the meagers, if you will. I still, you know, I still have these questions of self-worth. And there's a certain frustration. Prepare the ground for the seeds to sprout, yeah. There's a frustration for me in that. And so when I heard in this satsang, you know, what's the best way to prepare for enlightenment, it just really caught my attention. The other thing in that satsang let me tell you what I heard the answer was. The answer was to be open and to allow. And so let's look at this passage. This first passage that Peggy read to us from chapter 15. Let me turn to that. Yeah. Can you imagine what it means to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties, but merely to be perfectly calm and quiet all the time? Yet that is what time is for, to learn just that and nothing more. You know, so if you're looking for a definition of enlightenment or awakening, and I know Regina defined this as no mind in her talk, but I think that this is a very good definition of awakening, of enlightenment. Having no cares, no worries, and no anxieties, being merely perfectly calm and quiet all the time. You know, and really in that first sentence, within that definition is the answer. It's the way to get there. Because it's not, I don't have no cares, no worries, no anxieties because everything's going my way. I have no cares, no worries, no anxieties because I've released my need for things to be a certain way. I've released the personal self's need for certain outcomes. And so when this passage talks about letting go of my plan for salvation, you have to look at, well, what does that mean, letting go of my plan for salvation? You know, certainly that could be read as, well, I think that this is what you need to do for salvation, and this is how I'm going to do it. And that's not what this is talking about. That's not what Jesus is talking about when he's talking about my plan. I have to let go of my plan for salvation. My plan for salvation is what the personal self thinks is necessary to keep it safe. So that's what we're talking about letting go of here. You know, there's also a passage that says, actually, it's later in the chapter. It says, you know, you attempt to order life because you think that without that ordering process, without the ego to guide you in that, without using your past learning to plan your future, you think without that, all that would be chaos. And Jesus tells us actually, without that, everything would be love. So What my plan for salvation is my belief in what it's going to take to make me safe. And so that's how I try and orient my life. This is what I need in order to be safe. I do it with my circumstances. I do it with the people around me. You know, this chapter talks about, you know, what you use your brother for. You use your brother to sustain your own ego, to try and make yourself safe. That's my plan for salvation. God's plan for salvation is to bring me what will bring me to remember my wholeness. Yes, Kathy asked, does it work for me? No. Though, no, not very well, does it? Yeah. God's plan for salvation is what will bring me to remember my wholeness. And it's that time is for. And that first paragraph says that this state of awakening is achieved when you become such a consistent learner, you learn only of the Holy Spirit. Again, it's just talking about quit using your past learning. Because your past learning is based on this idea of I need these other things to keep me safe. So it doesn't work, as Kathy's just pointed out. Sorry, I looked too bored. I got distracted. So to be a consistent learner and learn only of the Holy Spirit is to give up all of those plans, to give up the concerns for the personal self. Really, it's to do what I asked in my prayer, and that is to really ask, how can I be a servant to the one true self? How can I assist the one true self in awakening to itself? It says, when I have learned to learn only of the Holy Spirit, to look only to the Holy Spirit, when that has happened, I'll no longer need a teacher or time in which to learn. I will have awakened to the one, that's right, for Zion is my own teacher. I will have awakened to the one true self. I will have awakened. Well, and then the second paragraph of that introduction says, well, then what's the problem? Well, and it says my discouragement is due to my identification with the ego. So, ego sees time as destructive because it's what ego does. Ego is all about destruction. You know, gloom, despair, woe is me, all you're ever going to get is destruction. You know, that's how ego sees time. And if I'm discouraged, it's because I'm looking with the eyes of ego. What Holy Spirit wants to teach me is how to be in the holy instant. Ego will always keep me in the past or the future. If I'm in the past, I'm dealing with guilt. If I'm in the future, I'm dealing with fear. Okay, so how do I do this? Let me read you another section here from the course, chapter 15, page 355. It says, when you have learned to accept what you are, you will make no more gifts to offer to yourselves. For you will know you are complete, in need of nothing, and unable to accept anything for yourself. But you will gladly give, having received. The host of God needs not to seek to find anything. If you are wholly willing to leave salvation to the plan of God, and unwilling to attempt to grasp peace for yourself, salvation will be given you. Yet think not that you can substitute your plan for His. So, how do I let go of my plan for salvation? You know, it's the surrender. It's the surrender that we've heard again and again and again. I have to surrender because I don't know what's in my best interest. I have to ask, how should I act in this moment? You know, the questions that are given us in Ramana. Hang on just a second. Let me get that. In Inner Ramana, we're told, what am I to do now? And it tells us that that question, that's right, it tells us that that question includes all of these. How am I to see this? How shall I listen? How shall I be now? What am I to hear? What would you have me know? What is my perspective as given by you? How shall I respond? What shall I think? What would you have me see in me that I am not seeing? Yeah. So, you know, what that requires, of course, is trust. Not just trust to turn over your plans, but trust and faith. And when you see the results of surrender, it might require further trust, because it's not going to look the way that you plan for it to look. You know, I don't know what anything is for. No, I will not use my past learning as a guide to teach me now. So, it talks about this, the reading that that Peggy read to us talks about this idea of communication and no private thoughts. And it says that it's a time when your mind is open to give and receive. It therefore seeks to change nothing but to accept everything. And, you know, and frankly, when Susanna Marie, I think I've got her name right, when she was asked the question, how do you prepare for enlightenment, that was her answer. It was practice being open and accepting. Now, why would that be so? It's actually, you see, it's the same thing. It's give up your plans. You know, if you don't have plans, you can be open and accepting. Yeah, thanks, Virginia. Yeah, you can be open and accepting if you don't have plans. It's just, what is given me now to do? So what's this deal about no private thoughts? Why is that? We all know that, and we often hear this no private thoughts, and anybody who's familiar with the Course knows about this section, but you wouldn't have put it here in the Holy Instant, would you? Or I wouldn't. Let me tell you. I wouldn't have put it. Well, what a strange place for that to appear, this no private thoughts idea. Let me turn to that page. Says every thought you would keep hidden shuts communication off because you would have it so. So what is this about? How does this relate to preparing for enlightenment? Well, if you will look at what you would keep hidden, and I heard John Mark Stroud, who I love, say this the other day. You know, if you look at what is it that you wouldn't want other people to know, this will tell you something about what it is you're still believing in. Those things that you would keep hidden are those beliefs, those limiting beliefs that you still accept. The want, the need to keep things separate, show you, to keep things private, show you that you're still believing in separation in this way. You know, why wouldn't I want you to know that that I was angry with you? Why wouldn't I want you to know that that I have these selfish thoughts? Because it could only be because I think I'm a separate self. It could only be because this is what I believe about myself. This is who I believe that I am. And I need to protect that. I need to protect it, you from finding out that that's who I am. You know, these private thoughts really show you that you believe you're a separate self. Moreover, what I would hide from everybody else is what I would hide from myself. You know, it's these I am unworthy thoughts. You know, I am bad thoughts. And Regina mentioned that the other day when we chatted about, my frustration about, you know, where's my enlightenment? And I'm like, how in the world does that relate? But it does. It relates because if I'm frustrated, if I'm attempting to keep thoughts hidden, I'm believing that that's who I am. I'm believing in this limited self that I have made. I am not seeing the reality, or frankly, even the possibility that I am everything. So, again, it says it doesn't require that you not have impure thoughts. It doesn't require that I don't have these selfish thoughts. It doesn't require that I don't get angry with people. You know, that's not what enlightenment's about. What it's about is going, oh, I see that. I see that I'm angry. Why am I angry? I'm angry because I believe that this is how the world should be. This is my place in the world. This is your place in the world. We're separate people. And in order for me to be safe, you see how my plan for salvation comes in there? For me to be safe, you need to behave in this way, or even I need to behave in this way. But this is what has to happen for me to be safe. Well, how could there be anything that has to happen for me to be safe, right? There can't be. Not if I am everything, if I have everything, if I am the one true self. And, of course, when I say I am the one true self, so I'm not talking about Jacqueline. I'm not talking about this little personality. You know, I'm talking about stepping into the magnitude of the one true self. And so I'm talking about letting go of the littleness. And, in fact, in the section that we didn't read, from littleness to magnitude, it says something like believing in your magnitude in a world of littleness is no small task. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. You are required, your function is to do exactly that, is to step into your magnitude and quit believing in these limited thoughts of littleness. Hang on just a second, let me look at my notes here. You know, and so, again, it talks about the Holy Spirit being your only teacher. And I'm going to back up to chapter 13, page 345. It's Jesus says, those who remember always that they know nothing, but who have become willing to learn everything, will learn it. But whenever they trust themselves, they will not learn. They have destroyed their motivation for learning by thinking they already know. Think not you understand anything until you pass the test of perfect peace. For peace and understanding go together and never can be found alone. So let's look at the test for perfect peace. Let me get there. Hang on. And I love this. And, you know, these days I very often write in the margins of my ACIM Sparkly Edition, ha ha, because it is, you know, the joke's on me. It is quite funny. And this is one of those times. So let me read you this. You have one test as sure as God. This is on page 343 of the Sparkly Edition. You have one test as sure as God by which to recognize if what you learned is true. If you are wholly free of fear of any kind, and if all those who meet or even think of you share in your perfect peace, then you can be sure that you have learned God's lesson and not yours. Unless all this is true, there are dark lessons in your minds which hurt and hinder you and everyone around you. So that's the test of perfect peace. So unless you're wholly free of fear of any kind, and if all those who meet or even think of you sharing your perfect peace, unless you can pass that test, then there is work to be done. Then there are these dark lessons that it talks about. Unless all this is true, there are dark lessons in your mind which hurt and hinder you. This is the process of purification. This is what we were looking at in the reading here, where it says, you know, if atonement weren't necessary, let me go back to that. Yet it would not be atonement if there were no need for atonement. The necessary condition for the holy instant does not require that you have no thoughts which are not pure, but it does require that you have none that you would keep. So, you know, and like Regina wrote a while ago, what's required is perfect honesty. You know, and you'll hear, if you listen to Gangaji at all, you'll hear Gangaji talk about perfect honesty. That's all that's required, that I be perfectly honest with myself, that I really look at what thoughts I'm still clinging to, that I think about myself that I think are necessary for me to be safe. It's those thoughts, it's that plan for salvation that keeps me from immediately stepping into the holy instant. You know, I have been going through a relatively trying time. It seems like that's true a lot. And I find when I'm troubled, if you will, I find myself asking for help. Sometimes I don't even know that I'm under a lot of stress or that I even feel troubled until I hear myself ask for help. You know, Father, please help me now. And I'm, oh, well, there's that. And I found myself asking that question yesterday or the day before. You know, I've got so much going on, and I wake up in the morning, and I'm like, oh, you know, I don't even want to get out of bed. There's just so much to do, and it just feels overwhelming. And I hear myself ask for help. And it occurred to me, well, what are you asking for help with? You know, help what? So that things will turn out the way you want them to turn out? And my honest answer today, and I'm so grateful for this, my honest answer yesterday, my honest answer today, is no. I'm asking for help to face the fear, to step into that. I'm not asking that things magically turn out the way that Jacqueline wants them. I'm asking for the grace to just be with that fear, to just feel what I feel, to be honest with myself and just be there. That's what I'm asking for. So the question is, well, what is my will? And my will is God's will. The question is, what can I do to serve the one true self? That's where my happiness is. That's where my magnitude is. That's where my power is. And that's what I want to be. I want to be an instrument for awakening the one true self into itself. And I think that I've probably gone over time. Let me see if I have anything else that I want to share with you guys before I give this mic up. There's actually one more issue that I want to just touch on, if possible. You know, we've always heard in this A Course in Miracles, we've heard the question of the issue of bringing truth to illusion or illusion to truth. And I think this is the difference when you look, and I know that I've heard Regina say she never found it particularly helpful, and I always found a little confusion. Well, what is that confusing? Well, what does that even mean? But I think this goes back to where I started with this first line. Can you imagine what it means to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties, but merely to be perfectly calm and quiet all the time? So, you know, from ego's perspective, what I would like to do as a long-term course student, as a devout seeker, what I would like to do is bring a little bit of truth to that illusion and go, well, you know, I'm always taken care of, you know, God's always got me, and everything's going to be great, everything's going to turn out great, and the truth is, that's not what that means. What it means to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties is that I no longer see myself as that being that needs things to turn out a certain way so that I have no cares, no worries, no anxieties. What bringing illusion to the truth is to bring my ideas that I need things to be a certain way to the Holy Spirit, so that those ideas can be let go. So the bringing truth to illusion again is the idea that I can sprinkle a little truth on what I think I need and make life all better. And that's not what it's all about at all. What it's about is bringing those ideas to Holy Spirit and leaving them at the altar. So I appreciate you all being with me today, giving me the opportunity to share with you. I hope that I have shared something that you can find helpful in your journey. I encourage you to really take this opportunity to claim the holy instant now, to live in that holy instant now, and to do that by giving up your ideas about what you need to keep yourself safe. And I will turn this back over to Lynn so that we can have a song and to play while we contemplate the message. And at this time also be aware that the Barb is going to post a link for donations. Awakening Together does run on donations. We appreciate your donations. We appreciate your being here. And I'll let go of the mic so that we can have that period of contemplation.
Exists with us and around us. there is a space that exists with us and around us.
Thank you, Lynn. Beautiful music. Lynn is so dedicated and so talented and always picks just the perfect music, and I really appreciate you doing that, Lynn. Thank you so much. So at this point, now that we've contemplated, we invite you to share the results of that contemplation with us. So I'd love for you guys to take the mic and tell us your thoughts. I'll let go of the mic, Regina.
Yeah, first of all, I decided to practice what I taught last week, and some of you who were here last week may have noticed that, because I wrote on the board, "What did Jacqueline say?" And then I spent the entire time the song was playing contemplating that and not allowing my mind to go in any other direction. And now if you were to, you know, if we were in the same place together and you were all to give us all a pen and paper and tell us to write an essay based on that 5-minute contemplation, I could do that. And I won't be able to share now everything that came to me in that 5 minutes. It would probably take 30 minutes for me to do so. But I will share a little. One of the lines that you quoted from A Course in Miracles, which I can't quote perfectly, but it was something like, if everyone else who comes into your presence or even thinks of you knows your peace, you know, then you are done. That's kind of a bad quote, but you get the point. You know, and when I used to read that line, I used to always have confusion about that because I thought, well, you know, that's not how it was with Jesus. They crucified him. You know, not everybody who thought of Jesus felt perfect peace. They hated him. They feared him. They crucified him. And so when you read that statement today, I asked for clarity regarding that. And what came was, who am I? You know, if I think I am Regina, that's an illusion of who I am. And certainly, you know, all of you guys have your Regina too, but your Regina is your Regina. You know, you have your perception of Regina. It's not necessarily the same as my perception of Regina or anybody else's perception of Regina. So if any of us, if I think of Regina, if you think of Regina, and we do not feel perfect peace, that's because we're thinking of an illusion. The true self is who we are. And when we realize the true self, anyone who thinks of the true self feels perfect peace. Right? Anyone who thinks of the true self feels perfect peace. So the question then for me is, who am I? And of course, that's what Jacqueline's entire talk was about, at least as I contemplated it. You know, if I think I am this personality of Regina, if I think I am this mind, these thoughts, there's going to be all kinds of stuff for me to fear, all kinds of stuff for me to hide, all kinds of things that don't bring me peace, all kinds of things I need to try and control in order to think I'm going to feel safe. It's all craziness because I'm confused about who I am. But if I know myself as the true self, even if I'm willing to just have faith that I am the true self, that's where it starts, right? Even if I'm willing just to have faith that I'm the true self, and therefore start letting go of all of the personalities, thoughts, and fears as they come up, right? Then I'm going to be able to get into that being open and allowing the peace, the path that passeth understanding. So one thing that Suzanne Marie said last week, and you mentioned her, Jacqueline, was Suzanne Marie or I, the two of us in discussion. I don't remember which one it is. It came up through our discussion. But we talked about how the reason we listen to that spiritual intuition, which is called the Holy Spirit, the reason we listen to it is because we know that's who we are. That's the real reason for listening. We listen to it because that's our voice. We don't listen to the mind and its chatter because that's not us. We're going to listen to us instead of listening to the not us. So, you know, you talked about all of these things. You touched on all of these different angles about listening to only one voice, not being afraid to look at who we think we are, surrendering our plan for salvation for God's plan for salvation, et cetera, et cetera. And for me, what all of this came down to is, who do I think I am? If I think of myself as the false self, I'm going to be trying to control. I'm going to be hiding from myself. Right? I'm going to be blocking communication. I'm going to be listening to the wrong voice. But if I realize who I am, or at least I'm willing to have faith in who I am, I'm going to be letting go of all of that, and I'm going to be moving towards realization, or as you say, preparing for enlightenment. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Wow, Regina, thank you so much for sharing that. That's what a beautiful summary. That was great. Lovely. Thanks so much for sharing that. I'd love to hear from anybody else who wants to share their contemplation. Okay, Karen, take the mic.
Hey, thank you very much, Jacqueline and Regina. That was perfect for where I'm at today. Before class, I read some with some out of the Course in Miracles, and it was about fear and, let's see, it was called Fear and Conflict, and it talks about how we have choices, right, and that. Sometimes we want to do something, but we don't do it, and then we feel later that we've been coerced. And then other times, and our behavior then is consistent, but other times we want to do something and we go ahead and do it, and then our behavior then becomes inconsistent. But basically what he's telling us is that to just realize that this thought that comes up, right, this thought comes up as fear, and that it's only with fear that we start feeling conflict. And so I had a fear thought come up about pie. And when I read through this, I was like, okay, this thought about pie is just fear. It's the fear, you know, that I'll eat the pie, or the fear that I won't eat the pie. And in either case, it's a fear, because I feel like that's something that is, I don't know, it draws me to it. So, and then I read in Inner Ramana, and this morning for my homework for Inner Ramana, and it just helped me. Your talk and Inner Ramana and the Course all just kind of put it straight for me. So I just wanted to read this out of Inner Ramana. It's on page 97. It's, the only choice is where. And it starts like this, or it goes like this. The truth is that all thoughts rise out of a sense of I, or because of the sense of I, as a correction to this thought. The state of true being precedes thought. Therefore, it is before thought, beyond thought, and afterthought. It is no thought. And it scares you. You seem to be death or nothingness to you because you are identified with thought. This is why people struggle against this idea so much. They believe the idea, I think, therefore I am, which would mean that not to think would be to cease to exist. But this is not true. Thought springs forth from existence. Existence is the birthplace of thought. Existence is not dependent on thought, and it never has been. The idea, I decide, is an error. You choose to engage in the belief in thought, or you choose to observe thought without being engaged, or you choose to abide in self completely and leave thought behind you, but you do not decide what the thought will be. Your choice is where, but not what. What is already in motion. But where you shall be while what does its thing is completely up to you, because the states of awareness are always available, always there for your choosing, no matter what is in the current moment. That is why knowing your heart is your only business. You do not decide what, so there is nothing about what that must be decided. You only choose where to be as what occurs, and where you want to be is not a question. You know where you want to be. Choose to be there, and you have completely alignment of will. Be aware that the only choice is where, and make that choice in the moment, according to the decision of the heart. And so, for me, choosing, I thought I had to choose, you know, whether to eat the pie or not eat the pie, and all I'm asked to do is to be aware, and so just to go to my heart. And so in that, I think that's how I prepare for awakening. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. That was lovely. Thank you for sharing that with us. There's one more thing that I would like to highlight before we go, and I know we're a little over, but... And I want to highlight that idea again, and it came up for me when Karen was speaking about this radical honesty that's required in order to bring my illusions of who I think I am to the truth. I had an incident yesterday. It looked like some money had been taken out of my bank account, and it actually had been added. I just noticed a discrepancy in the numbers. But so I had this incident where there was a discrepancy in the numbers at the bank. And so I'm telling myself, you know, it doesn't matter. It's all going to be fine. You know, one way or the other, it'll all work out. And it's, you know, and then when I realized that I was wrong about the numbers, that I actually had more money than I thought I had, well, I really felt this pressure lifted from me. And so I realized that I was telling myself these platitudes, but that's not what I was feeling. That's not what I was believing. I was believing that, you know, that I needed that money. I was believing that I'm a limited being that does need that money. I was believing that if things didn't go the way that I thought they would, that there could be trouble. I was believing, you know, whatever. I was believing all of these things, but until it was resolved, I really thought that I was in peace. So, you know, so and I saw Lynn talking about that shift a minute ago. Yeah, the shift is easy once you really get what it is that you're believing in. Once you're willing to admit what you really are believing in and to give those beliefs up, then it is easy. But the first step is the recognition of what I'm really believing about who I am. So, thanks for letting me share that additional thought there. Okay, does anybody else want to share before we go? Again, I think we're over, but... I want to thank you all very much for, that's beautiful. Self-honesty plus the desire for truth equal a shift of holy instant. okay, guys, I've got to run out the door. I'm helping host this James Twyman film at my local Unity Church, so I'm going to have to run. I love you all dearly. I'm so grateful to be here with you and to be on this journey with you guys. I just love you dearly. Thank you.
Guide me by